And Ms. Salal, Megan, would you like to explain that bill for us? We're going to do 849.
Chair Shannon, members of the committee, Senate Bill 849 establishes rights in utility or service roads serving a lot or parcel.
Okay, and Representative Cromwell, would you like to come up and bring anybody with you that you want to?
Thank you.
Okay, there's no one testifying against it, so just tell us why we need it, is there? Okay.
Thank you, Senator. Madam Chair, for the record, I'm Jerry Crummel, State Representative from House District 27, and I'm appearing before you on Senate Bill 849. What I would like to do to start off, if it's all right with you, is have Mr. Conkling, Gary Conkling, go first because he is he has a statement from Senator Randy Miller. And I would like to, if it's all right, get that on the record first, and then I'll come back in after he's done reading.
Okay, I will need to make one explanation. We had a transportation committee meeting from 3 to 5 and went directly to Ag till 6:30 and came directly to here. So that's why we're kind of eating in front of you, because we haven't had dinner.
I'm sure no transportation, so go right ahead and have dinner.
Okay.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Gary Conkling and I represent the Rolling Hills Community Church. And I wanted to read a statement that was prepared by Senator Miller in his district. The church is located. He couldn't be here tonight because he had parenting duty. So if I may just quickly read the statement as he wrote it. Madam Chair and members of the committee, I would like to express my support for Senate Bill 849, which clarifies the legal status of property rights of the Rolling Hills Foundation. Representatives from Rolling Hills Community Church and the Rolling Hills Foundation will give you the details regarding what prompted this legislation and what it seeks to accomplish. But in my view, this bill confirms the property rights of an organization that purchased land conveying clearly stated rights of access. This access was conveyed pursuant to eminent domain judgment to retain land for the construction of I-205 and was intended to assure the properties were not landlocked. The utility road in question was located by ODOT, which agreed to unlimited access to an adjacent roadway. This bill isn't about ODOT's access management program. It's purely and simply about property rights that we should guard diligently on behalf of Oregonians. That, Madam Chair, I'll submit the statement for...
Can you explain to us what happened? Like you did to me the other day?
Madam Chair, the witnesses directly following us were directly involved. I think they would be the best ones to do that.
Thanks.
If we could just allow them to do it.
Is that Paul Osborne and Wendy Kellington?
Yes.
Okay. Does anyone have questions of these two gentlemen? Okay. Do you want to just stay there and...
Sure, I'd be
are some of these your constituents or anything?
If I could make a real brief statement, Madam Chair. This church is also in my district. I share half of Senator Miller's Senate district as the representative. And like him, I believe the issues center squarely on the issue of property rights. It shouldn't be a question, but because apparently it is, we want to just go ahead and erase all doubt and pass Senate Bill 849. I think that we send a dangerous message to Oregonians when we allow basic property rights to be modified or voided without compensation or due process. And the sponsors of this bill, including myself, have written the measure carefully and narrowly to address their specific circumstances with regards to this property. And I know that it's wise politically to do that in this building, but it's too bad that we have to tread on such caution with regards to the principle of property rights. And so I would urge your support of the bill, and I would be happy to answer any questions, and I'll be glad to stay here as long as...
Why don't you go a few minutes?
Sure,
okay.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Wendy.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it's Paul Osborne. Mike, go first. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the Transportation Committee. I'm Paul Osborne, Business Manager and Secretary Treasurer of Rolling Hills Community Church, and also Secretary Treasurer of Rolling Hills Foundation. Rolling Hills Community Church is located on 33 acres of property on Borland Road in Tualatin. and I have attached a tack lot map which shows our location along the north side of I-205 freeway and just west of the Stafford Road interchange. Rolling Hills Foundation owns the 5-acre tack lot 900, also identified on the tack lot map, which has service road access to Stafford Road. The church plans to expand its building and parking capacity and wants to have access to Stafford Road to avoid the Borland and Stafford Road intersection as much as possible. Tack lot 900 had become landlocked by the construction of the I-205 freeway in the late 1960s, but that problem was resolved when ODOT acquired the 60-foot wide parcel dividing tack lot 1000 and built the service road. Rolling Hills Foundation acquired tack lot 900 in April 1998. When examining the documents regarding tax lot 900, we learned that it had rights to the service road ODOT had created over tax lot 1000, that a court judgment, which is also attached, had made it clear that there shall be no restriction of access to the service road. I also was given a copy of the attached February 26, 1998 letters, mistyped on the testimony I submitted, the 26th. Which was addressed to the owner of tax lot 1000 from ODOT senior agent Roland Arney, that makes it clear that access to the service road and Stafford Road is unrestricted. I also communicated directly with Mr. Arney to confirm the status of the service road and that it could be used. Since everyone was clear that ODOT retained no access control at the intersection of the service road and Stafford Road, we determined that tax lot 900 was an appropriate purchase for the foundation to make. When we later spoke with Clackamas County staff about our plans to use the service road and the probability that we would be asked to provide a left turn lane on Stafford Road, they deferred to ODOT because of the proximity to I-205. When we met with ODOT staff, they would not discuss potential improvements to Stafford Road because, they said, we would not be permitted to use the service road. They would not provide any documented justification for their position. At that point, we hired an attorney to advise us concerning ODOT's authority to restrict access. When she told us there was no authority, we scheduled a second meeting with ODOT staff to see if they would either discuss our project or provide documentation for their position. They maintained their position that they could restrict our access and referred us to the Attorney General's office for justification. Our attorney will provide more specific information about the legal issues, but I have read the correspondence between her and the Assistant Attorney General, and to my knowledge, there has been no proof presented of ODOT's right to restrict the use of the service road. ODOT's unwillingness to work with us on reasonable improvements to Stafford Road makes it difficult to get permits from Clackamas County. A bill such as Senate Bill 849 seems to be the only way to clarify that unrestricted actually means unrestricted. Thank you.
Wendy? Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Wendy Kellington. I'm an attorney at Schwabe Williamson & Wyatt representing the church. And just to sort of give you maybe a little bit more background, in the beginning was the denied parcel. And the denied parcel stands across what is now I-205. When the I-205 freeway was to be constructed, ODOT had to acquire a big swath through the denied parcel, and in acquiring that swath, it cut off all access rights that the subject parcel had to Stafford Road. It filed a complaint against the denied family, arguing for condemnation, but as part of the settlement of that litigation in, I believe it was November of 1968, ODOT stipulated to a final judgment in the Circuit Court of Clackamas County that determined it would construct a service road, the subject road, to Stafford Road, and that there shall be no restriction of access to a service road to a connection with Stafford Road. And I've left out some of the language, but that's appended to both Paul's materials as well as mine. They paid a sum of money to the denied family, representing the cost of the acquisition, but because no access rights were taken from that parcel, of course, they didn't have to pay for the deprivation of access rights. Accordingly, the title report and all of the requisite legal documents that affect the subject parcel, tax lot 900, what used to be part of the denied family holdings,
now states that the service road is an unrestricted access right. Nobody would have thought that unrestricted had any meaning other than restricted. But when we approached ODOT about that issue, the Attorney General responded, and it's attached as item 4, the Attorney General's letter to the materials that we furnished you with CAB. Among other things, the unrestricted access merely reserved the right to apply for a permit from ODOT. And we felt that, that's on page 2, we felt that reasonable people entering into their most serious of affairs, giving some of their land to the public good for the construction of important public transportation facilities, would reasonably believe that they could accept from their government a sum of money representing only a taking of their property and not of their access rights. This bill that we have proposed simply avoids unfair surprise. It simply says that when a circuit court judgment awards unrestricted access rights to parties as part of a fair judgment, that unrestricted means unrestricted in its common sense of the word. We've attached other documents for you for your review if you're interested in talking about them. Mostly they provide some more background. There's a document in here, February 26, 1998, from Roland Arney with ODOT that confirms his understanding, at least, that unrestricted meant unrestricted. Consequently, we urge you to support Senate Bill 849. We believe that it is not a tremendously surprising piece of legislation. It simply confirms the reasonable expectations of parties when they deal at arm's length with their government and judicial proceedings. And if you have any questions, would you please answer them? Thank you.
Question? There are 1, 2, 2 more people to speak for it. Yeah, I know, these two. I'm anxious to hear what ODOT has to say. I'll go in order. I'll actually just bring them right up, but stay close, because we might have you up here at the same time.
Certainly. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Okay, Robin Phillips and Vincent Alvarez. Yeah, you'll have to move, and then we'll have... Yeah. We'll see what these people say. Is Robin here?
No, I'm here.
Okay, there you go. Okay, then, and did Vincent also? Oh, good. Okay. Craig Greenlee? That made that quick. Will you help us understand this, Mr. Greenlee?
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Craig Greenlee. I am Deputy Director for Transportation Development at ODOT. I will acknowledge to the committee that I am learning details of this that I haven't had an opportunity to fully review, but wanted to provide testimony to the committee this evening about the concerns that we have about the bill. The bill, as has been indicated to you, would limit ODOT's ability to deal with restrictions of access to the state highway system, and in the case of using a utility or service road, would prevent us from putting any restrictions on that by using the language unlimited and unrestricted as to use and circumstances. ODOT must ensure both that property owners have reasonable access to property, and that there be that we consider and take into account the issues of safety and so forth that have to be judged in a particular case like this. I have indicated on page 2 of this testimony the kinds of factors that need to be accounted for in dealing with the access points at which this kind of a project, the kind of access should be considered, including factors such as locations on curves, steep grades, site distance issues, and the like, location of traffic control signals and similar traffic control measures, highway design issues, and volumes,
speeds and so forth, which...
Mr. Greenlee, do you think this case that you're making right now was made to the judge?
Madam Chair, I do not know the particulars of what was being before the court. I've only moments ago seen a copy of this particular ruling. We, I think, had before the court an issue primarily around what was the value to be placed on the property and under what circumstances that value was to be placed. I do not know the arguments before the court. I have no record of the truth.
I see these safety, you know, factors that you took into that you always consider. Did you offer them another access road?
We have. There are other accesses to the property in question, with respect to the church property itself.
Is that what the law says? You have access to the church property or to a road?
What the law requires, Madam Chairman, is that the department provide for reasonable access to the property.
Okay. Does anybody else have...
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So if I heard you correctly, Mr. Greenleaf, are you saying that... Your concern is that Senate, this bill has wider implications, not just for addressing this particular issue, but the issue in other cases where you're trying to determine safety and access, and that you have concerns about that?
Madam Chairman, Senator Shields, yes, that's correct. We are concerned that about the various forms in which this bill's language would affect our ability to manage on behalf of the state's highway system.
So can you give me a little bit more information about that? How? I mean, an example?
Let me, Madam Chairman, speak to the particulars of what are the changing patterns of land use that happen in this particular area. And I think it's illustrative of some of what we need to manage in the context of this, of trying to deal with the particulars. We have, in this particular area, changes that are occurring both with respect to development that is occurring as a result of the current condition of the urban growth boundary and the possibility of additions to the urban growth boundary in the vicinity of the subject property. We are seeing increased volumes of traffic on Stafford Road, on Borland Road, which is not a state facility, but is nonetheless achieving higher volumes of traffic. There are, as a result of those increases and increases that we would project into the future, at least the possibility in the foreseeable future that we may have to deal with ramp metering on some locations within the Interstate 205 corridor, and therefore the implications of trying to deal with those changing traffic patterns may have substantial implications for this particular point of access. Now, we haven't had a chance through the detailed discussions to figure out, you know, the locations where ramp metering may be possible, where what implications that may have for this particular point of access, if any. But those are concerns about the long-term management of the facility in this particular area.
That's it. Senator Steele, would you follow up?
I guess I do, Madam Chair. Thank you. So you were talking about, you're still talking about this particular case, though, or...
Madam Chairman, Senator Castillo, that's correct. I was trying to illustrate it with the particulars in this case. I think there are other circumstances where ODOT has a frontage road or similar kinds of treatments, and these tend to be most common in areas that surround interchange locations. And the bill's language seems to suggest that where those may be present, that we would not be in a position to put restrictions as to turn movements and similar kinds of treatments that are common to dealing with interchange location issues.
I have a question. If you're concerned that this is going to affect other areas, are you guys hold out in the habit of telling people they have unlimited access, and then when they try to use it, you take it away or say it doesn't mean that? Are there a lot of these situations?
Madam Chairman, there are two main things that that deal with locations where access has occurred. Some years ago, the Commission used to use the form of a restricted access that spoke to what uses were authorized for a specific access location. In those cases, deeds spoke particularly to uses such as grocery store, motel, or similar kinds of uses. What the Commission found and what they chose to do was abandon that particular treatment is that the use of that particular term was limiting to the point of being quite cumbersome to work through. So as commercial uses turned over and so on, we found that we had to go back and review and deal with deed changes in order to authorize what is really just a change in normal business use. So the distinction over the term and the use of the term unrestricted has been one that the agency has used with respect to the limitations on use, not with respect to the limitations on how one deals with the turn movements and operational characteristics of the point of access.
Are we sure?
Yes, Senator Hammond.
Mr. Greenlee, is this a land use issue versus a MoDOT issue, or does it embrace both?
Madam Chairman, Senator Hannon, I think that there are implications with respect to both. I think that ODOT's interest in the issue is primarily one of trying to manage the access portion of it. It's not trying to deal specifically with the land use side of the question.
You used the word momentarily ago. You wanted to restrict the use, or ODOT wants to restrict the use. Use is usually tied to land use. Is that a fair assumption?
Madam Chairman, Senator Hannon, what I was trying to make reference to was a former practice that was in place that has since been abandoned, where uses were made specific, that is, the deed records treated uses in a quite specific and named manner. It's not a practice that the agency has in place today.
Were you over at LCDC?
And Chairman Senator Haynes, yes, I was.
I think I got a quibble with you when you were over there. And now you're all about handling right away?
Madam Chairman, Senator Hannon, the unit that I am responsible for is transportation development, which deals with the planning issues of the agency. It deals in part with what access management policies we have. It is one of the things that is on the portfolio of things that I'm...
Is that what growth management is? Transportation growth management?
Madam Chairman, it is where the transportation growth management portion of the program is located.
Okay, Senator Ferriola.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Mr. Greenlee, the mention that the use of this form of agreement has been abandoned by the agency. Does that mean that it no longer recognizes obligations that it's made to willing sellers?
Madam Chairman, Senator Ferrioli, I don't think that's what my reference or response to the question was intended to convey.
Madam Chairman, if I could continue.
Okay.
Mr. Greenlee, do you know instances where specific accesses were negotiated as part of the consideration for a transfer of an access that was sold to the Department of Transportation?
Madam Chairman, Senator Ferrioli, I think that there are many occasions where the location of such access points have been negotiated, and most of the time those are areas which retain the original abutters' rights of access, which are also subject to the permitting authority of the agency.
Madam Chairman, that was a fairly evasive answer. Let me restate the question. Mr. Greenleaf, do you know of any instances where property was purchased and as part of the consideration that was paid to the seller at either a specific number or a specific location of accesses were promised to the seller in the deed?
Madam Chairman, Senator Ferrioli, I think that there are, as I tried to respond earlier, I think there are a number of occasions, many deeds, reflecting that original abutters' rights of access which are retained with the property, and those are specifically enumerated typically as to engineer station and width.
Were you finished with your answer?
I was finished.
Should have just trailed off there. So original abutters' rights, Madam Chairman, if I could continue, were enumerated. In other words, they were specifically called out as part of the consideration for the transfer of property.
Madam Chairman, Senator Ferrioli, that's correct.
Okay. Was the value established for those?
Madam Chairman, Senator Ferrioli, I think that in some cases there were values and considerations in the process of negotiating what those abutters' rights would mean, and therefore, yes, I think that they did have value.
Okay. And in my understanding of the elements of the contract, you have to have a willing buyer, a willing seller, a legal purpose, offer, an acceptance, and a consideration. Is that correct?
Madam Chairman, I'm not an attorney, but I'll accept Mr. Senator Ferrioli's analysis there.
Well, Madam Chairman, I'm not an attorney either, but when you offer a consideration to purchase property, and later on, when the individual who sold to you in good faith is told that accesses that were specifically enumerated in the deed are subject to some interpretation from a person in your agency that didn't negotiate for the deed, and the agency refuses to honor the access points and then claims that the access points have no value. I've always believed that amounts to theft by deception. And I wonder how the agency can offer from one division, the access and management division, a consideration from your right-of-way agents and then turn around later and deny the access that was granted in the deed to the seller. Can you explain how that happened?
Madam Chairman, Senator Ferrioli, in many cases we have considerably different conditions in place between the time of the original negotiation and the circumstances that surround the property at the subsequent point. In many cases, the particulars are with respect to the highway facility itself may have changed. There may be changes with respect to lanes, traffic volume, uses that are considered on the property, the traffic volumes generated by those uses, and there may be signalization or other traffic controls that are now present that were not present at the time. And I think that it was in part based upon those considerations that the legislature required the establishment of permits separate from the negotiations that cover the issue of trying to deal with the permitting responsibilities of the agency as well as the ability to apply for those permits.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Does the agency use the standard warranty deed or some lesser form of a deed when you purchase property?
Madam Chairman, I am not Senator Ferrioli, I'm not sure of the exact form of these, but I believe that reasonably represents what some transactions may contain.
Mr. Greenleaf, are you basically familiar with what a granting clause grants?
Madam Chairman, Senator Ferrioli, yes, I am.
Could you characterize what a granting clause grants is?
Madam Chairman, Senator Ferrioli, a granting clause would typically specify the precise location of a term of a grant of access. It is, in some cases, separate from the reservations of access that are handled in some cases in a different manner than the grant.
And a granting clause is specifically in a deed because it conveys ownership, not only to the person or persons receiving the conveyance of ownership, but to their heirs and assigns and executors forever. Is that not correct?
Yes, that's correct.
But that forever in that case is conditional on a decision made by somebody else in your agency.
Madam Chairman, Senator Ferrioli, that there are remains permitting obligations that are present for the property, much as there would be for other kinds of things that would be subject to permits with respect to the property.
Madam Chairman, one question on the screen. Did you ever negotiate any Native American treaties? Because it seems like the forever that you use in the Department of Transportation when you grant ownership of an access is just about like the forever that some of the Native American treaties got when they signed governmental agreements with the U.S. government.
Madam Chairman, Senator Ferrioli, I certainly have not had that experience myself, and I won't speak to the agency's history of working through Native American issues.
Madam Chairman, I regret that my effort to inject a little levity in this line of questions failed so miserably, but it's fairly outrageous that an agency with the full faith and credit of the state of Oregon can approach a willing seller and negotiate, ostensibly in good faith, for the acquisition of a widening strip or a piece of ground that's considered necessary for the health, peace, and safety of the citizens of Oregon and the completion of the project, and specifies, even to the point of locating the property with radius curves and survey notations, how many accesses and where they're going to be, and put that in the granting clause of a deed and or a reservation, and then pay for that property and have that reservation part of the transaction and part of the consideration of the transaction, and later on have somebody else in the same agency refuse to honor the consideration that was used and out of the agreement. You know, the title transfer is effective. The owner doesn't have the right to rescind the agreement just because the agency didn't fulfill its part of the contract. I'm just amazed that people have been going through this so long and the legislature has not dealt with this issue. It's just a simple fraud on the citizens.
And fraud is the word. And your levity didn't pass me by, just that I'm so disgusted with the truth of your humor. But I want to read again to you Wendy's testimony, just a couple of lines. Bottom of the first page, it says, here ODOT exercised its substantial authority through litigation proceedings against the Denuys. The government stipulated in legal proceedings that the access rights over the new service road it created to serve Tax Lot 900 were unrestricted. The award of unrestricted access over the service road to Stafford Road means the state paid less money to the Demuri family for the state's act of taking their property for public use. ODOT was certainly able to ask the court to award restricted access or to appeal the circuit court's judgment awarding Tax Lot 900 unrestricted access. ODOT could have even reserved control or access rights along the frontage road of TL Tax Lot 1000 as part of the court judgment. However, ODOT did none of these things. And now they want to come and say, oh, take us to court again, because we didn't really mean unrestricted, meant unrestricted. And I think it's time that ODOT kept its word. Just because they've gone into the land use planning business, we have a land use planning and LCDC, but I would like to ask Wendy if she would come up and if she had anything to add to make clear anything that's been gone, that we've talked about. Is Wendy still in here?
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
I'm sure,
mm-hmm.
Has ODOT had any second thoughts on this access road?
Madam Chairman, Senator Dukes, I began my research with respect to this parcel at about 3:30 this afternoon, so I do not want to represent a thorough understanding of all the particulars in this instant case. I did that in anticipation of trying to be able to respond to the broad questions that were raised in this particular case. I think that the agency does keep an open mind about trying to work through access management questions, and I respect the interests of the parties that are present here this evening advocating on behalf of this bill. There may be superior ways to handle the access on this particular site. I haven't had a chance to fully explore what those might look like and to suggest to the committee that we are able to do so, but I think that the agency stands ready to try and deal with the particulars in any case.
Is it safe to say that ODOT does not have a position on Senate Bill 849?
Madam Chairman,
it's starting at 3:30 this afternoon. I mean,
I did not intend to represent a position with respect to the bill. I wanted to raise issues with respect to the implications of the bill to the committee as it deliberated the matter.
Okay. I don't like Senate Bill 86, is it? The one that, yeah. But things like this make you understand how it is some of the members of this chamber got there.
And 773, thank you.
Yeah, that's a little...
They changed their mind.
That's a little different. That was on high. 86 is...
Yeah.
Large. Mm-hmm. But you can kind of understand how they get there?
Madam Chairman, Senator Dukes, I have been working on access management quite ardently. I believe that the agency needs to improve its practices around access management questions. I think that we are intending to do so. I think that some of the particulars about how this work has transpired historically have been unclear to people. I think that that's one of the benefits we get of the work that is anticipated through Senate Bill 773. We did express concerns about Senate Bill 86 as it came before the committee, and we remain concerned about what implications could arise from that bill, but with respect to trying to address more completely, more thoroughly, and more fairly the issues that surround access management, I think that the agency recognizes that there's some improvements to be made.
Okay, I think it's true. Senator Farioli had some very good questions. What do you think the agency might be able to come up with an answer to the legislature's questions about, which have been going on for a few weeks now, about selling a piece of property, giving or buying a piece of property, or condemning a piece of property, getting consideration for the fact that you give access that's on the deed and then denying the access? I mean, seems to me it's maybe not as straightforward as I'd like it to be, but it's more straightforward than some of the other access issues. Do you have a feel for when the agency might get around to a better policy on that?
Madam Chairman, Senator Dukes, I think that there are a number of places where the revised highway plan tries to address these questions to introduce a level of flexibility and to manage access in a manner that is more consistent with the land use plans that local governments have adopted. We do have a continuing obligation to try and deal with issues of safety and so on, which we have no ability to abandon no matter what the consideration and agreements that were reached at the point when those, which can be considerably changed now in today's circumstances from when the deeds were originally handled.
Deed, and your stamp of approval has to be on the transportation plan.
Don't
you have some flexibility in there somewhere?
Madam Chairman, Senator Dukes, we are also trying to see what level of flexibility we have in dealing with issues related to compensation around the issues of access management and the controls that are provided there. We recognize that as a significant issue before this legislative assembly. We're trying to continue to work on language and response to the issues raised by Senate Bill 86 that is more...
soon might be too much to hope for.
I'll tell you, Madam Chairman and Senator Dukes, there isn't a day that goes by that I don't try and work this issue. I mean, it is an issue of some complexity, both because of the ways in which the courts have interpreted these provisions of the law, and trying to manage the broad trust issues that we have and making sure that there continues to be resources applied to the system. And those are all balance points that differing people can have differing opinions about.
I just do want to say the reason I have a short fuse on this is I can name 4 property owners that had the access, and ODOT said, if you don't like our decision, take us to court. All 4 of them won, and it was up of the $400,000. And ODOT, instead of putting the money in the roads, had to give it to the AG to defend their position that they lost. And one of them, down by Albany, after they were deeded the access, you wouldn't give it to them, and they had to get a court order from the judge that you'd be in contempt, and they lowered the barrier to his land just 10 minutes before it was taken into effect. And I don't think, personally, you'll act and do, and Mr. Greenleaf, those may have been before your time, because I don't know how long you've been with ODOT. How long have you been there?
Almost 1 year.
Yes, these were before your time, so I'm not going to hold you accountable, but I think we need to give you some direction, and frankly, I want to work another bill before 7:30, and so
can I just ask one quick question?
Yes.
Thank you. I think I'm confused. Earlier you said that you were concerned about this bill in its wider implications on safety, and then you just said that you're not opposed to the bill, so
Madam Chairman, Senator Castillo, we wanted to express our concerns about the bill. As an agency, we have not taken a formal position with respect to the bill, and that was in response to the questions I was hearing from Senator Dukes.
Senator Perry,
thank you,
ma'am. Quick question.
Mr. Rooney, I didn't realize you were so new at the department. I guess the content of some of my questions is directed at the department, not at any particular employee. But I guess it still stands that even getting it in writing from the state agency isn't enough.
Or from the court. You didn't entail that. So I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill. Sorry, Randy. I think we will go. Senate Bill 849. And I'm opening work session on Senate Bill 849.
Actually, I will move the bill, Senate Bill 849, with a recommendation for a disaster report.
Senator Farioli has moved Senate Bill 849 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion?
Madam Chair. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
I'm going to vote to get this out of committee so that it can count. And I withhold making a final decision until it hits the floor.
That's great.
Because I want to do some more research on this.
Okay.
I think it's a broader issue than just one driveway. I think there's potentially a lot of other sites that might be of concern, and for that reason, I'll vote to move it out, but withhold final vote on it.
Maybe they'll come up with an idea that they'll pay. They're not going to get them unrestricted or something. Okay.
I just want to say, I
I very much understand the frustrations of the people who are involved in this particular case, and it sounds like communication was extremely bad in that case. But I have concerns that this remedy, this bill, goes a little too far, and I'm concerned about other implications it might have, too. So I'm going to vote no for now. I'd like to study it a little bit more, too, but I'm voting no.
Okay. Court will call the roll.
No.
Aye. Having received a majority, the bill passes and goes to the floor. Do we have a carrier? Senator Ferrioli will carry the bill. Yes.
I was a yes on this before you got to the last paragraph again. It's unlimited access to the state or county highway.
It's only what they said they'd give the people when they bought it.
But not knowing what the traffic patterns are and all of there, I would go along with access. Unlimited access is really broad. It's left, right, and straight across. And that, I don't know what kind of a road this goes onto or what the traffic patterns are.
I thought that during testimony they said they'd work with that, hold out on the kind of access they wanted.
And I wouldn't be surprised if they would,
Just an observation.
Yes.
Every landowner in Oregon has the right, a common law right of access to their property. But it is a limited right. It's an easement by necessity. And it can be abridged by almost any agency that wants to put forward some kind of parameters. In this case, I don't think unlimited means unlimited. I think in this case it means that the agencies don't have a right to put limitations on it. I hope that the agency gets the message and stops negotiating in bad faith with people and means what it says when it acquires land and offers accesses. And if this is the mechanism that we need to use to send that message, then it's an appropriate vehicle. I'll be happy to share the bill.
Good. I hope the church gets the bill. They get the message. Okay, then I'm going to close the public hearing, the work session on Senate Bill 849. And to the rest of you, I really thought it was a short bill. We would do it out here. But I do have a short bill, and I'm going to open a public hearing council work session on Senate Bill 1006. Okay.
Chair Shannon, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1006 allows action for state traffic offenses, circuit justice, or municipal court in the county other than the county in which the offense occurs. And that's only under certain circumstances.
Okay, Greg Brown, would you like to come forward? Frank, the sheriff of Deschutes County, this is your deal.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Greg Brown. I'm the Deschutes County Sheriff. This bill will affect all of us in the state of Oregon, not just in Deschutes County. I'm giving two handouts. One is a letter from the Deschutes County Board of Commissioners just asking your support. The second one is from the Sheriff's Office Legal Counsel. When LC drafted this bill, there were some errors in the numbers in the ORSs. We caught them, but the bill had already been printed, and we were told there was not time to change it, so they said wait until the bill was heard. And so I have brought a one-page memo from legal counsel asking that if this bill moves forward, that we do change the ORSs and put the proper ones in Senate Bill 1006.
Okay. Your legal counsel.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. And I think it's pretty self-explanatory what she is saying. Senate Bill 1006, essentially what it does is takes traffic offenses which are not punishable as a crime in the state of Oregon, so basically infractions, traffic citations, speeding offenses, and things like that, and allows them to be heard in what in law enforcement we call post-court jurisdiction. An example right now in state court for Deschutes County is the county line on western Deschutes County is at the Camp-Sherman Junction. We then go in Jefferson County and Linn County. The state police might be up on the top of the pass and issue a citation. They can presently cite somebody into the closest court, which if you're at Hoodoo, would be in Bend. You cannot do that into a justice court, and so what happens is that if a Camp-Sherman resident or a sister's resident, for instance, in this case, is cited they go to Bend, which is from Camp Sherman, 35 miles, instead of going right into Sisters to a justice court.
But if you're from Salem?
If you're from Salem, then the officer makes the decision what court he's going to decide into. Commonly, though...
Under this law?
Under the present law.
Oh.
And so the officer would just give the officer additional discretion. What we're trying to do, and there's many cases throughout the state that the state courts are located quite some distance, especially for traffic offenses, from where the people live. And so we're trying to provide more reasonable accommodations for the citizens so that for those counties, and there's about 28 that have justice courts, that they can go into the court, which is commonly in their own community, instead of having to go someplace else.
Well, I'll just tell you that if we would have had this yesterday, we could pass the bill out tonight. But we have to have our legislative council make this into the, you know, a dash one amendment. So we will schedule this lunch schedule for Friday. Yes, yes.
Is there a situation where the nearest court may be only a circuit court?
Yes.
Strange. You get a speeding ticket and you find yourself in circuit court.
Well, all, you know, we the legislature changed the law a few years ago, and all of our state courts now are called circuit courts. And so that's commonly, we still, they're sort of district courts, which was the courts that did traffic offenses, but technically they're now called a circuit court. And I don't know if that's when the wording changed or if it's just been called that. I'm not really sure. And I apologize for not bringing this yesterday.
Okay.
Again, real quick.
We could pick it out tonight if you had it.
The reason for the ORS is that we're in error. We want to make sure this specifically follows the law and only applies to the infractions, not the crimes. And so, again, I think LT will agree with the comments that were made.
Fine. Not a problem. So with that, we'll close the public hearing, and you don't really need to come back all the way over
this morning. Thank you,
Madam Chair. You have the questions today.
Yeah,
okay. It's all right. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thanks for accommodating me.
Sure. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1006 and the possible work session. And now we will open a public hearing. What's the one left? Okay, we'll have a public hearing on Senate Bill 881.
Senate Bill 881 deletes statutory requirement to spend highway project money on footpaths and bicycle trails. And this measure has to be sent to the voters in a general election, and also the members attached to the
ORS that we can at 66. You can see that's actually being taken out.
Okay.
All right. Why don't we come up in groups of three? Don Staffos. Catherine Ciarlo. Karen Frost Neely or Mercy. There's three.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Mr. Southwick is a former state representative from actually Jackson County, still a constituent, and he was the father of the bicycle bill back in 1971. This is when we had a very progressive governor and a progressive legislature come out with the beach bill and a number of rallies and bicycle paths is one of those things. It's something we believe in very firmly in Southern Oregon. In fact, Mr. Staffis is one of the few that has a bicycle path named all the way from Medford to the Medford City, Jacksonville, in his honor. And it's something we feel very strongly about. And it is indeed a pleasure that I get to welcome him here tonight.
Mr. Senator Farrelly, the man in the middle is the father of the bike. That's what he did. And they made the
grandfather,
and is Senator Hannon's constituent, and this huge long bike pass named after him. Okay?
It's an honor, sir.
And when you testify, what do you, because we have some questions, what do you think if we change shall to may, if we kept, or we had another offered amendment? But go ahead.
not exceed the amount.
Okay.
I'm going to make a short statement. I have some copies here for the committee. Madam Chairman, members of the committee, as a member of the House from 1968 to 1972 on the Republican side, I was the chief sponsor of the bicycle and pedestrian bill known as House Bill 1700 that created the statute 366.514. This was in 1971. This was probably the first law of its type in America given Oregon national recognition for this historic first. In 1974, I was appointed by Governor Tom McCall to serve on the Oregon Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Commission to ODOT and served as first chairman. I've been reappointed as a member of this commission by every governor since, and think that unofficially I'm the longest serving member of any governor appointed commission, 25 years in the state. I'm not sure where I am in the longest in age. I want the members of this committee to know what a pleasant experience it is to be sitting on this side of the desk and only have to be concerned at this time with one piece of legislation rather than hundreds. I'm here to show...
Thousands now.
I'm here to show my concern and to state just a few reasons why it is my opinion that Senate Bill 881 should be withdrawn. I could write a book on the subject, but I will be brief. First, the statute in question deals with pedestrian facilities as well as bicycle facilities. Both are of equal importance, and demand and necessity is there for this mode of transportation, for the physically well-being as well as the handicap. If anything, the facilities for this mode of transportation should be strengthened rather than weakened. Second, the federal government's transportation policy now recognizes the need for facilities for pedestrians, the disabled, and bicyclists. There are times when the federal government looks to Oregon for guidance in these areas. Third, Oregon is recognized nationally as the authority in bicycle and pedestrian facilities. Almost every state in America looks to Oregon's Department of Transportation for some guidance. ODOT deserves a tremendous amount of credit for their attitude and what they have done in not only providing facilities, but providing guidance. When I was a member of the House, it was easier to conceive of the Israelis and Arabs making peace than the Highway Department working with a Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Commission and being concerned with this mode of transportation. Oregon is looked upon nationally with envy as a great place to live. When you're out of state mentioning you're from Oregon, you can immediately detect the envy in the person's eyes. One of the reasons for this is that people nationally look upon Oregon as a state concerned with all modes of transportation. Bicycle and pedestrian facilities help accomplish this. In regards to traffic safety, if you were a trucker driving a large diesel on a highway without adequate shoulders for a bicycle, it is a very traumatic experience to pass a bicyclist knowing that just one minor error on the bicyclist's part could develop into a fatality. A motorist is very often the same traumatic situation as the trucker. It's not just a question of legal liability. It's not a question of the bicyclist feeling safe. Adequate bicycle and pedestrian facilities are an asset and help everybody, regardless of their mode of transportation. Now, in regards to economic growth to our state, there are many roads to Rome, and one of the most overlooked determining factors companies looking for a place to locate is what are the living conditions for the families of the managers of the company and their employees. Financial considerations are, of course, important. But how will I and my family like living there is becoming more important than ever. The bicycle and pedestrian bill helps establish this kind of favorable image. Oregon is a great state to locate in. Second, there have been favorable collateral effects of devoting at a minimum 1% of highway funds for bicycle and pedestrian facilities. This has inspired hundreds of people throughout the state to take an active part in politics who would not otherwise be involved. Our form of government really comes alive with this activity. This is from people concerned with ADA and pedestrian facilities as well as bicyclists. These people have become concerned about what the needs and priorities are and how the monies are best spent. Many beautification projects have been inspired just from the construction of bicycle and pedestrian facilities. Just one example. Bicycle path was constructed near Roseburg along an ugly, muddy ditch. The incompatibility was so obvious to the county government that the muddy ditch was filled in and beautified to make it a pleasant experience for a person to bicycle or walk. In regards to physical and mental well-being, our country is the richest nation in the world, but we have pretty much physically constructed our country so that it is almost impossible for a person to stay in good physical shape as a normal part of their daily living. It should not have to be a drive to the health club environment. In addition, children should be able to go to school, visit a friend, relative, go to a park or playground, or the Little League, or just to go for a walk without mama having to drive them in a station wagon. They should be able to do this with some degree of safety. Historically, the main consideration in getting from point A to point B was how fast can I make the trip. Two other considerations should be, how did I enjoy the trip, and what effects did I have on my fellow man? I live in Jacksonville, a town of just 2,000 population. The entire town is officially designated as a historic monument. I think I'm part of the historic. It's just 1/2 mile from my home to downtown Jacksonville, and it's probably one of the most beautiful half miles in America. You walk past the pear orchards, then past the old historic church, then you see the American flag flying on top of the old county courthouse that has since become a historic museum. This is a very pleasant and inspiring walk. My wife and I had two young daughters, ages 5 and 8, when we first moved to Jacksonville. We could not let them walk or bicycle to downtown Jacksonville because of no sidewalks or shoulders along the roadway. It was just too dangerous. On a tandem bicycle, I'd ride with my 8-year-old daughter. If an auto came by, we would have to go on the gravel and very often had a flat and had to push the bicycle home. If life in a small 2,000 population city is like this, just imagine what it's like in a major city. There's no doubt in my mind that what many of the aberrations in human behavior in the city stem from the concrete and steel and blacktop syndrome that permeates the construction of urban America. This is really the impetus, our inspiration for the sponsorship of this legislation. A person should be able to keep in good mental and physical shape as a normal means of living their life. That every person should be able to walk out their front door and be able to choose to walk or bicycle where they want to go as well as drive. There's no way to be construed as anti-car. I love cars and have several and recognize the need for additional sums in order to properly maintain our roads. Regards to pollution, this is more than a consideration of the consumption of fossil fuels or of noise and air pollution. It deals with the consideration of each person's personal existence and well-being and ability to cope both physically and mentally with the act of living and being a responsible part of society. These are just a few of the reasons why Senate Bill 881 should be withdrawn. I really could write a book on this subject.
Well, Representative Stathos,
yes.
You seem like a kind man. I wish you were my friend.
You're
very nice. But there's one thing that you said in your testimony here that the reason I introduced this bill, you said in third to the last paragraph, I love cars, have several recognized the need for additional sums in order to properly maintain our roads. See, I don't believe it's $2.5 billion. We really need additional sums. I think we need to be spending the money we have properly. And it just, I wish somebody would explain to me why, you could see how much is actually, it says no less than 1% goes to bikes, what it is actually going to bikes now, bike paths, and how little, less than 20%, actually gets to constructing our roads. And all the things that we're into in ODOT, all the social engineering and all of the things that they're into. And my question is, if you're eating up such a big part of the budget, and I don't take away from you that you should have the right to buy and whatever you want to do,
other people like to ski, but that doesn't mean that we have to provide them ski paths. And I just wonder why it is that the bikers think they don't have to contribute any money. Oh, they say they're saving us and saving us. And I guess that's what I'd like to know, is why they think that the rest of society should pay for their hobby.
Madam yeah. Chair, the point you're bringing up, my 25 years in the committee, this has been brought up every year.
Sure.
And it's a valid point, and it's worthy of consideration. The response of principally is that practically every single person who has a bicycle is a motorist. In fact, every single person who's a motorist at some time in their life has bicycling. So you're coming very, very close to the person who's paying using it. It isn't just the bicyclist. The bicyclist is the motorist, and the motorist is the bicyclist. So you're not given a free ride like you would be, like you're saying, on skiing.
But see, in Washington, they can take out the general fund for roads. Other states, you can do this. Almost every other, but Oregon, the cars, people drive cars and trucks pay for the roads, period. It doesn't, we can't take from the general fund. And that's why, and I just, it just seems like out of goodwill, you would offer to do a $15 registration or something.
I'm here in regards to the subject of license.
Mm-hmm.
In the 25 years I've been on the committee, this has been discussed. And frankly, every member of the committee has been on both sides of this issue. We officially are not, have no objection to the licensing. Let me see what the practical problem has been. We bring before our committee members from the Department of Motor Vehicle, and this is what they tell us. It's going to cost as much to collect the money as we get. That's the problem we've had.
Mm-hmm.
That the bicyclist does not have an adamant objection to licensing at all. It's been studied at the committee. In fact, we even had a bill drafted one time on the committee. But you want to remember that the majority of the bicycle facilities in the state are not just for the bicyclist, they're for that motorist and that trucker as well. They've got to be there. And how much of the money of this 1% is being spent on pedestrian facilities is tremendous. Those facilities have got to be provided.
Okay. Yes.
Don, 1%, what was it in approximate dollars in 71? Do you recall what 1% generated?
I think at that time it was about
$800,000 or $900,000. So it's... 28 years later, and says here that it projected to get $809 million in the ODOT budget, so that would be $8 million. In 28 years, it went from $800,000 to $8
million. It's gone up a lot in the 20.
But it's not, if you compare what ODOT was receiving in 1971, then they were only receiving $80 million to get 1%.
Michael Onken from the highway from ODOT is here, and he could answer that.
Okay. Well, what I'm trying to show is that inflation has taken its toll over that period of time, and the 1% hasn't ever been changed. Is that correct?
No, it has never been changed, and that, Madam Chairman, I want to mention there's a lot of people that would like that 1% raise, and my position has always been don't try to raise 1%, and I want you to know that.
And this is approved by the voters?
No, this is approved by the legislature. Well, it did not go to the voters for vote.
Okay, and this has a requirement on it that it goes to vote of the people?
Yeah, 881, it would be referred to the voters.
Okay. And one last question. Do you fund, like, the Greenway in Jackson County from Central Point to Ashland, which is about 25 miles along Bear Creek? Have you funded part of those bike paths and walkways?
The Greenway in Jacksonville is not funded from this because that is not... that's not right-of-way, highway right-of-way.
So it's only in highway right-of-way that you're funding, and typically it's a shoulder that needs to be widened to allow a bike rider to travel without being impeded by a vehicle or struck by a vehicle. Is that?
That's right. That, in essence, Senator, is absolutely correct.
Okay. Thank you.
That shoulder is going to be widened anyway.
Okay. I just want to say the law says that it shall never in any one fiscal year be less than 1% of the total amount. There's no limit on how high it can be. It just says it can't be less than 1%. And for historical perspective, between 79 and 81, the whole ODOT budget was $200 million when they built the 205. Just, you know, we talk about inflation. $200 million. And Senator George, would you explain that overpass? How much, do you know how much that one cost in Washington County just to fix the bike path?
We don't for sure. That's a question we've been asking for several weeks. We do have some rough estimates. It's just one of many in the Beaverton area. Literally, when we went out and photographed it, we looked at it, the net gain was only the bicycle path, and it's supposed to be somewhere between $8 and $10 million. We have the bridge that's just being redone in Portland. When I toured that with Region 1 Director and Tom Millay, the major modification structurally that bridge, which is the major beam that's on the west end of the bridge, it's the main support structure from the bridge lift, had to be completely retrofitted and actually had piers back into the water just to get the bicycle path through. And there already was a bicycle path there, a bicycle combination bicycle walkway. And we asked, wouldn't it have been cheaper to suspend it like a walkway above the bicycle and check it below rather than completely change the structure of the bridge? And I have a list of projects, 86 through 98, and these only include what definitely is described as bike path. And this has $20,414,000, and this is just in the Portland MP Road, $20 million.
For a 2-year period?
For 86.
Oh, 86.
I mean, excuse me, 96, 97, 98, 3 years.
$20 million.
Here's another one. This is, the wrong one. This is additional transportation funds, 1998. The actual expenditure was almost $10 million and almost exactly 6%.
For
bicycles. The thing that we've been noticing is photographing these is that massive expenditures of funds for the net gain is literally a bicycle path. Complete disruption of business districts just to get a bicycle path and eliminating all parking in order to get the bicycle lane in. What's interesting, when I've been over shooting the pictures, I did this over several weekends, only one day was even slight showers during that period of time, and I didn't see a single bicycler. I did see two people on the sidewalk after several hours in the area of the Burger King by Fred Meyer and Beaverton. But the point of it is this is not an anti-bicycle bill. It just says it's time when ODOT claims it doesn't have adequate money, and when we're spending so much on the bicycle path, maybe it's time to look at a better way to spend money. One of the issues that we've talked about very much is the idea that you go off of the state highway for a lot of these projects, build them on a less used city street, which makes a lot more sense, but, you know, significantly less cost, and going in and totally disrupting the business district, going through a town like, say, let's say, for example, Newburgh or Dundee or something like that. So it's a good thing we're having the debate, because it really needs to occur.
Notice in the bill, they cannot condemn any property. That was one of the requirements that I had in the bill. And the other thing, that some of the expenditures you're talking about are federal matching, like the 205 Bridge has got a beautiful bike path on it. You've probably all seen it. 90% of that is paid by the feds. Not the state of Oregon.
And that was early 80s. That's when it was reasonable.
That
was in the early 80s. That's when it was reasonable. Now we have a $2.5 billion budget, and we still don't have money for roads. That's our concern.
Well, our opinion is that what you're saying is 100% true, but some priority in life has got to be given to something besides the automobile. And that's what we're saying is one.
Then take it. I agree, but take it out of the general fund, because that gas money is the only way we get money for the roads. That's just, you know,
sure.
Personal. Okay, and advocate for it from the general fund. Are you going to say something?
No. Any questions?
Yes, go ahead.
Well, first of all, I think this is one of those
occurrences where we that quite frequently happen in the legislature, and that is that we meet somebody that has genuine vision. It probably doesn't happen frequently enough, but I just wanted to mention that I was gratified to see Representative Staples here today. Interestingly, part of your testimony talked about filling in a mud hole, and I think that's a $100,000 fine now under the Clean Water Act. Well, I've got some that I'd like to see filled, but I don't think that's going to happen in my lifetime. Did you join, Mr. Staples, through the chair, did you join the group that did the cycle Oregon route to Eastern Oregon 2 years ago?
No. No, I did not.
Yeah, I think you missed a good trip.
I love the bicycle, but I'm not a tour-type bicyclist.
Well, it was interesting to those of us that average 40,000 miles a year or more in our automobiles to see the folks on their cycles coming around the Strawberry Wilderness area and the Strawberry Mountains. Since you weren't on the trip, I won't ask you how you like the roads, because they're pretty tough in some of those places. Some of those places, the potholes are... hold hands, and that's the only thing that keeps the roads together. So there is a question about where we allocate our dollars to. The district I represent, 17,500 square miles, and we don't have a lot of bike paths in that area. But the question I have is, Madam Chairman, how should cyclists help pay for paths? Not should they help, but how should they help? And I wouldn't accept the inefficiency of a state agency as a good reason not to step up and say we need to do something to support our mode. So how should they help?
The committee has given a lot of consideration to this. My opinion is that the state agency just did not want to do it. This is what my opinion is.
I think I'm seeing a pattern here, Madam Chairman.
But to get to your specific question, though, I think you've got to get back to, you've got a motorist here, and that motorist at some time in his life is bicycling, and the bicycling is motors, so there is a pay. You could make the same argument for a person who has an automobile that gets 8 miles a gallon, a person that gets 20 miles a gallon. That's certainly unfair, but there's no such thing as the perfect paying for the facility. That does not exist within the auto, and as you pointed out, Madam Chairman, that you do not feel it exists in the bicycle, but it comes as close as you're ever going to get user pays.
Well, yeah, Madam Chairman, I think that's largely coincidental. I don't think that they're connected at all. I mean, the fact is that some folks that own automobiles ride horses.
Sure.
But, you know, the I don't think bridle trails are in the... I just would think it would strengthen your argument if there was even a token connection between the benefit, which is substantial, and the user, which are a small fraction of the total population of Oregon.
We've never been opposed to that concept, all right? Okay.
And, Madam Chairman, just two more questions. Is there a citizens group of cyclists that are advisory to the Oregon Department of Transportation?
The Oregon Department of Transportation has this commission appointed by the governor, and they're from a very broad spectrum. We have young person on the committee, we have people in the industry on the committee, people in government on the committee. I'm a member of large on the committee.
What's the name? What's it called?
The Oregon Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee to ODOT.
And do they look at specific projects?
Yes.
Do they ever talk about the relative benefit as opposed to the relative cost?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so that I'm sure I'm glad to see that there's a citizen connection. And then the last question, I've not seen, but I've heard and read about a group or several groups that are fairly militant about the rights of ridership, and they stage various, I guess, their events in Oregon. I wondered if you had any comment. I don't even know the name of the group, but I'm sure that Representative Staples knows the name. What is the name of the group, and what's their objective, and why are they so militant?
You know, I do not know the name of the group, but I will say the issue you're bringing up is one that really concerns us, you know, with naturally, we would not approve of anything like that. Look at it as a minus.
Okay. That's all my questions, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Okay. So, yeah. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. I was just mightily frustrated that ODOT's kind of gone, you know, bikes at any cost, no matter about the roads. And we're just trying to find a solution without raising taxes, how we get the money back from the roads.
Madam Chairman, before the bill was passed, the highway department could build bike paths out of highway funds. And there was no limit. They could spend 90% if they wanted to. So if you repeal the law, you probably have not changed that. All the law is saying is that a minimum 1% is expended.
No, it says no less than. They can go as high as they want.
At a minimum, yes.
No less than.
But that was true before the bill was passed. There was no limit.
So they use that. That's their mandate.
Thank you, Chair.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say for the record that I don't see a need for this bill, and I am very supportive of ODOT spending resources on bike paths, and I think it's a way of us creating a balanced transportation system in our state. I think it's a very visionary thing for us to be investing in, and I very much support that people that we are developing more bike paths around the state, and that Oregon is looked at as a leader and that we are being innovative in how we're using our funds. So anyway, I just wanted to, because I know that you were hearing other voices on this panel, and I just wanted to let you know that I very much support the laws that we have on the books for bike paths.
Madam Chair.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, Senator Castillo isn't alone. I have roads falling into the ocean. I have them falling off the sides of the cliffs and those kinds of things. And I need to have those things fixed, but I take more bicycle paths in a second. I live on the coast. And I can't ride a bicycle. I've tried several different times in my life. Maybe now that the weight has redistributed, I could try again. I have a good sense of balance. So I can't stay upright on them, but that doesn't mean we don't need them.
Yes. Perhaps Senator Duke could join Senator Castillo on a tandem for that balanced approach you
enough to keep mine up, I'm afraid.
Well, I love the bicycle, so anyway.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Catherine Charlo. I'm the Executive Director of the Bicycle Transportation Alliance. We are a statewide bicycle advocacy organization. We have about 1,400 members. And I was thinking when Senator Farrielly was asking about this group, last time I went to the post office and took a check, I gave them my check, and the teller said, "You aren't that group that blocks streets, are you? Because if you are, I'm not going to cash this check." But anyway, that's not us. We actually work to improve bicycle facilities and offer bicycle education and bicycle safety education throughout the state. And I'm here today to oppose Senate Bill 881, as you know. I think the first thing I want to say is the Bicycle Transportation Alliance exists to pick up on something you said about a hobby, because we really believe that bicycles can be a very important part of Oregon's transportation solution, and not just a hobby. Certainly, we support everyone's desire to ride a bike for recreation, and that's wonderful, and many of us too, but our real reason to be is to have people use their bicycles to help meet their everyday transportation needs. And that can mean for an adult commuting to work if they live within a reasonable distance. In the metro areas, it's meant sort of partnering up with transit and biking to transit, putting your bike on transit. It means giving kids the independence and mobility that they can have so they don't have to be driven everywhere, as Representative Stathis was saying. It really means giving us transportation options in our system, and options for people who don't necessarily own cars or don't drive cars, and that can mean the elderly, it can mean the disabled, or it can mean children. So that's our reason to be, and that's why I'm here today.
Excuse me, does your group then believe in contributing also?
Oh, absolutely. And we would very much be willing to talk about how bicyclists do already pay their way, and I would love to talk a little bit about that, and also how we can pay our way. If I can just touch briefly on some of the benefits that we see, and I think Mr. Staffa said this as well, but for example, in Portland, and I realize that Portland is just one community in Oregon, but we have 10,000 trips a day going in and out of downtown, and for us that can translate into thousands, probably not 10,000 because we do have transit in there too, but thousands fewer trips by automobile, thousands fewer parking spaces necessary. That's kind of one tangible way. We talked about bicycles not creating emissions, having real health benefits, which I think is just especially important at this period in our history when the National Center for Disease Control is talking about lack of exercise and an inactive lifestyle being the major causes of heart disease, of stroke, of high blood pressure and diabetes. Research shows that when people do ride their bikes to work, to school, those bicycle car crashes that nobody wants to happen reduce by half the nurse bicycle facilities. That's why we want to see them happen. And finally, I guess I said this already, bicycles provide transportation options in our communities throughout them. I guess what I, the perspective I'd like to put all these benefits in is to talk about how all these wonderful benefits come at a really small comparative price tag. And I'm not exactly sure where Senator George has some of the figures, but I'd like to just put a few numbers into perspective here. The first one is the estimated average annual expenditures by ODOT under the bicycle bill for the past, I think we're looking at about 10 years. That's $4 million.
No.
It's an average. And that's under the bicycle bill. And I think what I think might be happening with some of the numbers is the federal monies that are going into particular projects and also the monies that are local bond measures might be added in here. The city of Portland, their average annual, under the bicycle bill, this is the gas tax, 1%, their average annual expenditures have been about $1 million on bicycles. They do have much higher level of expenditure, but again, it's come from federal dollars for specific projects. And Multnomah County was $50,000.
You know, what we wouldn't be having this hearing if that were, if what we see in their budgets that's prompted us to consider this. I'll show you. Do you have your mailing address?
I'll make sure that you
okay.
do. But these are the numbers that I have from ODOT, and I have no...
Who gave them to you from ODOT?
The Bicycle and Pedestrian Program.
How long ago?
2 weeks.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. In looking at that number, in looking at the percentage that's spent on bicycles, about 88% of the money that ODOT has spent has been actually on sidewalks and pedestrian facilities, not, in fact, on bicycle facilities. The reason for that has been because sidewalks are more expensive to build. And we at the BPA are a huge supporter of sidewalks. We absolutely want to see them. What's happened in terms of bicycle facilities is shoulder widening and paving, sometimes striping of a lane, and sometimes some intersection work if there's an intersection that's quite difficult to cross.
You know what, I don't want to interrupt, and everybody's here and everybody has to go to work tomorrow, and this committee's all written notes they want to leave by 8. So if we don't pass the bill, would we all be happy? I don't know how long you want the hearing to go, but I mean, if we just left the bill alone, would you be happy?
Yes. I'm getting the elbow.
And I would like the copy of the document that said they'd spent $4 million.
Absolutely.
Madam Chair, maybe before we leave, is someone from ODOT here and we could ask them to tell us how much they spent on bike paths and we could get that on the record while everyone's here?
That's a great idea, sir. That's a great idea. Here he comes. Doug.
Madam Chair, I'm going to ask Doug to identify some of those projects that I've been asking about and just tell us how much extra that costs. And I will concede that absolutely a lot of this cost is a sidewalk. But they had sidewalks on them before. The net gain seems to be the bicycle path. But if we could get those numbers, that would be greatly appreciated.
Okay.
Chair Hannon, members of the committee.
Good evening.
Doug, maintenance engineer from the Department of Transportation. Senator George, I understand we're addressing those specific issues raised up on 217, and I guess I don't have those numbers tonight. But let me try and clarify this number issue. The way the Attorney General has told us to interpret the current law is that we have to spend no less than 1% of the state gas tax dollars. That's not all the dollars flowing into the highway fund, but the state dollars flowing into the highway fund each year on bicycle and pedestrian facilities. From an ODOT standpoint now, and Senator George, this is in no way quibbling with your number of that's in the staff, because I know that number's large. But from an ODOT standpoint, not local programs, in the last 13 years, we spent just under $39 million, about $3 million a year.
How much is in the SIP right now?
The Chair Shannon, Senator George, in the 9801 SIP, I believe Senator George probably has that number, is $22 million. Is that correct, Senator?
For 2 years.
But only 1.8 of that is state dollars. 1.8 million of that is state dollars. So in addition to, we do try and count those other aspects, and that's probably debatable about whether we count them correctly or not. But we feel like we have the one project in there in 3 years that's a $1.8 million bike ped identified as a bike ped project. And then we look at other modernization projects and we estimate the additional cost of providing the bicycle facility. Again, I'm only talking about the ODOT expenditure. I'm only talking about state fund expenditure.
I saw from the auditor that it was a year, $720 million came in from gas tax. So that would be $7.2 million, wouldn't it? 1%?
Chair Shannon, again, it's the only 1% that we spend is 1% of the state gas tax dollars. Right. I believe that $720 million would include some federal money as well.
So state gas tax. And the 8 mile was $430 million, mm-hmm. and the gas tax was $720.
Chair Shannon, would that possibly be in a biennium?
Could be.
Then you're right down to about $360 million. You
don't take it from the 8 mile then? One percentage of what comes in from the 8 mile tax?
Gas tax, right?
They both go into the...
It's all funds in the highway fund.
Okay, because so it
would be 1%.
So you have to add those mm-hmm. together.
Yes,
so
all of the state funds.
1% of a... Right. Okay. So it's a whole lot more than three.
Well, no. I'll have to go back and look, but the number in the number of dollars in 1997, this is 1 year again, is $330 million, state dollars in 1 year. So in a biennium, that would be $660 million.
From all sources, registration, weight mile?
Yes, of state dollars, not counting the federal dollars.
Well, we'll talk tomorrow.
Okay.
I was taken by ODOT to see, I believe that's the Hawthorne Bridge, that the lift bridge is being redone and painted. What is the cost of that stretch that goes out there to support it just to get the bicycle path in there? That was a major construction. That completely changes the design of the bridge. How much did that represent?
Chair Shannon, Senator George, I don't know what the cost of that is. I do know that that's a local option project, and I don't know that project. And I don't know.
What did he say, Doug?
Well, I'm not going to try and describe it because I don't understand. Oh, I'm sorry. What he's clearing up for me, Senator Shannon, that I forgot to that I did not clarify for you. When you're talking about the ODOT expenditure is based on ODOT's share of the highway fund. So if you say that
there's
a large number that comes in and then it gets split to cities and counties, and we only do 1% of our share of the highway fund. So 60% of the state dollars that are coming in, we do 1%.
So you don't expect the cities to do 1% of theirs?
That's up to the city. I think they have to by law. Yeah.
Okay, then I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 881. And no further business, we are adjourned.